All right, welcome back. A whole lot of headlines today. A lot of different things. Some are the same. There are some categories that are of interest. Let's just start and read a few here. Trump flip-flops again and now says he's not determined to open the country for business in May. Trump announces second coronavirus task force and says he must make the biggest decision of his life soon. Wonder what that might be. Is he going to resign? No return to normal under Donald Trump. Experts explain how the nation faces mass digital surveillance, massive testing, forced vaccinations, and recurring social distancing, as apparently the virus comes back in waves, which we fully expect. Let's see, here's another one here. Trump desperate to reopen the U.S. because he's panicking about the polls. Well, remember, it's AAD, all about Donald. That's what it is. Trump to name advisors on reopening the country amid the coronavirus pandemic. Well, my response is, why not just have Jerry Kushner do it, Donald? Forget the advisors. Just give it to Jerry. Jerry's got everything else. Might as well have this. Expert says the U.S. will not get back to normal for another year and a half. The end of 2021. Wouldn't surprise me. Not at all. Walmart, Costco, and Target are banned in some states from selling anything described as non-essential. Items such as clothing and electronics, you can't buy them. This has got to be stopped, of course. It's crazy. Here's Tony Fauci, who we call Dr. Faustus around here. Dr. Faustus says we could eventually be forced to carry certificates of immunity to coronavirus. Well, sounds like Billy Gates. Fauci says Trump administration is discussing mandatory immunity cards for coronavirus survivors. Well, survivors shouldn't give you an immunity card because China has proven over and over again that reinfection is common. Ron Paul says Trump should fire the fraud Dr. Fauci, who seeks to have total control over the people of America. Now, there's some truth in these things, and some of them are hyperbole. We understand all that. Just to give you an idea of what some of the headlines today are about. One interesting one, Attorney General Barr is very concerned, that's a quote, about Bill Gates' digital vaccine certificates, and says further that draconian lockdowns must end. That's the Attorney General, Bill Barr. All right, Henry, welcome back. Sorry about last night to all of you who were expecting our report. We were all ready, but we lost the electricity, telephone, and internet to the entire town virtually where the network is located in Pennsylvania. So it was a funny bit of timing indeed, but it just didn't happen. But we're going to make up for it tonight. Hello, Henry. Welcome back. Let's get to it.
Hi, Jeff. Yeah, there's certainly been a lot. And your headlines kind of centered around a kind of thorny issue here with the pandemic kind of raging in the U.S., the U.S. being number one, and exactly how to kind of get back to semi-normal in the face of this very, very high level of activity, and some indications that there's the social distancing is modifying the intensity and modulating and bringing it down a little bit and kind of flattening the curve, so to speak, but still an awful lot of virus, and the distribution's kind of heterogeneous, and it's not clear that it's going to be under control anytime soon. And Trump, wants to get back to work, and still has all of this virus with concern that if everything kind of returns to normal or starts to return to normal, the virus will just bounce right back. And just some of the numbers, to kind of put it into perspective, today the U.S. had almost 34,000 cases, which is the highest it's been, and had over 2,000 deaths. And, you know, relative to the rest of the world, the 34, you know, almost 34,000 brought the total over 500,000 in the U.S. So we've got 501,000 cases now. And the next closest is Spain, which has 158. And then Italy's at 147. And France is 124. So you can take the top three and combine them, and they'll still have less than the U.S. It's got over 500,000. And then the data from the U.K. indicates that it's delay in implementing social distancing definitely had an effect. So the U.K. Has more cases today than any other country in the U.K. Well, any other country in the world except for the U.S. And it had 980 deaths today. So France is still right up there. They're 987. So they're both, you know, right around 1,000 deaths per day. And France is had gotten up to 1,400. So it's come down a little bit. And the UK, you know, started taking off a little bit later. And now it is on its way to these higher numbers, indicating that you know, it's not that obvious that there's going to be much of a seasonal dip, and it's kind of maintaining this rather high level.
And I think you're right, Henry. And let me say this. Henry's the first, really, to put that out there. We don't necessarily see a big seasonal dip in this. The virus is 10 times more infectious than the typical influenza virus. So even if it's reduced by 50%, it's still going to be outrageously infectious. Okay? Critics are raising concerns now as France is considering digital tracking, as are other countries, to try to control this thing and at least track. So the tracking aspect is clear. They're making apps for this. But don't look for a seasonal drop-off of any really great significance. There's still going to be plenty of opportunity to get infected. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, there's been some additional news that kind of tells you why it's really going to be difficult to control and have other ways of maintaining itself over the summer. Like you said, the level's very high. Got this polybasic cleavage site so that the level in individuals can be high. And its ability to infect other species is becoming increasingly clear. I'd mentioned a couple of days ago that the sequence was out from the bronze zoo, right? So it's in wild cats, it's in lions and tigers, and of course, if it's in lions and tigers, it's almost certainly in domestic cats. So it's in pets And so that kind of gives another reservoir. It can be in cats in the house. It can be in cats that are kind of feral in the city. And so it kind of gives another animal reservoir for the virus to kind of hang out. And the cats, especially the feral cats, aren't going to be exercising a whole lot of social distancing. And so there's kind of another
or
reservoir
are the feral
for
people, Henry.
right. And then even on the people side, you still have the essential services and people, you know, still going to work to kind of keep food flowing and people going into stores, you know, for essential, you know, food and medicine. And so there's still, I mean, the flattening the curve talks about keeping it from peaking and getting too high for the healthcare sector to handle it, but it doesn't indicate that it's going to, you know, flatten it and make the curve disappear. In fact, it has a tendency to broaden the curve so the virus hangs around for a longer time period, just at a lower level. And so that's just another reason that it's probably going to hang around. And so there's a couple more pieces of information regarding the virus itself and why it's a problem. You know, as your listeners probably recall, I'd mentioned that the outbreak in New York was really the Italian strain, and then the New York Times came out with a story a couple of days ago, which confirmed that, and that story talked about the fact that there were a couple medical centers, NYU and Mount Sinai, were both doing extensive sequencing on their patients, and they both came to the same conclusion that this was largely European. The article gave a little bit more details about sequencing in general and how the virus changes, and you can kind of trace the virus. And it noted that both of these institutions came to the same conclusion that the virus that was circulating in New York was largely from Europe. And they also made the point on the timing of it, that the virus really started coming over from Europe to New York in mid-February, and that, you know, at the end of January, Trump had put in the barring foreign nationals from China, and that Italy didn't become that obvious until late February, and when they started locking down their towns and cities. But it wasn't until March 11th that Trump did his blockade from Europe, which was, you know, yet another example of closing the barn door after the horses were out.
So, that's 10 weeks after he was formally first advised by Intel that China had an out-of-control, very dangerous virus. And we think it started as early as November, these briefings.
Right. But the fact that it was coming, the fact that it was coming from Italy was actually clear well before the March 11th date. I mean, I recall looking at the data on February 21st, which was the 17th anniversary of checking into the Metropole Hotel. And the activity in Europe and the Middle East had really begun several days before that. And then it was clear by February 21st that many different countries in Europe were starting to test people that had symptoms and had been in northern Italy, and they were getting one positive after the other. There was a soccer game that had already been tied to being in Milan. And in the U.S., there had been a big fashion show that had been in Milan that was in February. And there were skiers that had gone to northern Italy. So there were lots of opportunities for travelers from the U.S. to either go to the fashion show or go to the ski resorts and bring the virus back. It became clear that the virus was spreading out from Italy all over Europe and beyond. Algeria announced their first case, and it was linked to northern Italy. And then Brazil announced their case, and it was from northern Italy. And shortly after that, Nigeria got into Sub-Saharan Africa, was a a worker who had come from Italy, and then Mexico had cases from Italy, and Canada had cases from Italy, and everybody had cases from Italy except for the U.S. Mm-hmm. And the reason the U.S. didn't have any cases from Italy wasn't because the virus wasn't coming from Italy and wasn't populating the East Coast, including New York. It was they weren't being tested because they were only testing people who would come from China. So if you came from Italy, you weren't on the list. You weren't being tested. Right. And New York was getting seeded, and it was silently spreading. So the virus was coming to New York in mid-February. It was obvious that it was in New York by late February because it was everywhere except the U.S. And so there was no reason for it not to be in the U.S. But there was a reason for it not to be reported in the U.S. because the U.S. wasn't testing anybody from Italy. If you were from Italy, wrong country, we're not interested. All we're looking for is if you were in China. And if you weren't in China, you weren't getting tested. And if you weren't getting tested, there was no tracing of who your contacts were. There was no contact tracing. The virus was free to go wherever it wanted to go. And it was going under the radar. And it wasn't until well after that that New York had its first case. And then it started spreading like wildfire in New York. And they started bumping up their testing and made a pledge that they were going to do 10,000 cases a day. And they started doing that, and they found out that they had a major epidemic in the New York area. And the sequence data that started coming out, you know, many weeks ago, and I commented on it several times, that the sequences that were coming out of New York were all Italy. Or they weren't all, but they were 90% Italy. And between these two universities, medical centers, they had spread out. NYU was mostly doing cases in Manhattan and cases in Nassau County. And then Mount Sinai had a little broader sampling. They did all the boroughs in New York. So they did the Bronx, and they did Brooklyn, and they did Queens, and they did Manhattan, and they did Staten Island. They even did a few out in Westchester County. And then NYU broadened it out a little bit and did a few cases in New Jersey. And they all had the same pattern, that they were heavily dominated by sequences that were found in Italy, the same lineage, even the ORF8 lineage from New Rochelle was from Spain, was from Valencia. So it was clear that the sequence, the virus that was coming to the East Coast of the U.S., was largely from Europe. The virus that was coming from to the west coast of the U.S. was largely from China. And it turns out that the version out of Europe was more virulent. And that's why when you look at these, you look at the numbers, and the U.S. is clearly number one, but the heavy activity with a large number of cases and the large number of deaths are really in Europe. And, you know, it started with Italy, and then it went to Spain, and then it went to France, and then it went to the UK. And those are the top generators of cases and deaths and dramatic increases with a very short doubling time. So they were doubling their cases every 3 to 4 days or 2 to 3 days even. And the same thing was happening in New York. And then if you compare those to Asia, China as well as the adjacent countries, they all pale by comparison. And there, you know, there were probably some unreported cases in China, but the other adjacent countries that were being infected by China had a similar low level. So, you know, South Korea did a lot of testing and they kind of got things under control. And Japan kind of caught and got things under control, as did Singapore and Hong Kong and Thailand. And it was easier to get it under control because the early version of the Wuhan virus was not as virulent as this Italian version, and as right. well as the version that was in Iran. And so the U.S., even though it's surrounded by two oceans, airlines didn't see that as a major barrier. And so the U.S. was getting hit on the western coast from China, and it was getting hit on the eastern coast from Europe. And it was the eastern coast that was causing the major problems. And that's why when you kind of look at the data now, you know, by states, New York is far and away number one, but right behind New York is New Jersey. And, you know, just today, there were 3,500 cases in New Jersey, and there were 232 deaths in New Jersey. And now Michigan has moved out because of the Detroit area. So they had 1,200 cases today, and they had 205 deaths. And then Massachusetts has got 96 deaths today, and Pennsylvania had 78 deaths today. And so you're getting these larger numbers on the deaths, and that's how the U.S. got over 2,000 deaths today. So, you know, it was a big deal when Italy had gotten 275 deaths in a day, and then it was like 450 deaths in a day, and it was 600 deaths. And then it got up to 900 deaths, and they're all dwarfed by the U.S. The U.S. is now over 2,000 deaths.
Did you see the note out of Italy today? A very sad note. They have now lost their 100th frontline doctor to coronavirus.
Yeah.
100 doctors, MDs, dead in Italy.
Right. And the U.S. is not going to be that far behind. The U.S. is, you know, losing MDs and other healthcare workers and first responders. And it's early. I mean, the U.S. trails Italy by quite a bit. And Northern Italy was a fairly wealthy area. I mean, that's part of the reason the spread happened. There's people that went to ski resorts and so they basically did get overwhelmed that, you know, they stopped treating patients that were over 60 and they just had too many cases. And when you get that type of activity, it not only is bad news for the patients because they run out of ventilators and they just get overwhelmed. And when they get overwhelmed, then they start getting more MDs and other healthcare workers.
That's still bothering 100 doctors in Italy, Henry. That's a terrible blow. That's huge.
Well, unfortunately, you're going to get numbers, you know, that may not get up to 100, but you're going to get significant numbers in the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
The U.S. still has PPE issues. I mean, a report came out today. NPR was carrying it, and that indicated that FEMA didn't really place their orders for PPEs until like 2 weeks ago. So, I mean, it's just absurd that CDC, like 6 weeks ago, was saying that, you know, there was a potential problem with the supply chain for PPE, and they were concerned about that. And that was 6 weeks ago. And it was kind of like, yeah, they were concerned about it, but nobody seemed to be doing much about it. And so there's still shortages. And there's companies in China that are switching over to do masks because everybody is outside of Asia now is getting concerned about wearing masks and is becoming mandatory. And California and Europe is looking for masks. And so now that they've switched over and they're making masks, they're running out of gowns. So the gowns is that the healthcare workers where are now in short supply, and they said that FEMA had ordered when they ran out of gowns in their reserve, they ordered new ones. And how many gowns do you think they've ordered so far in FEMA for the whole country?
Zero.
20,000.
Zero.
20,000 gowns.
Same thing.
No,
zero.
They're right.
They'll go through those in one state in one day.
Exactly. So now there's a gown shortage, and healthcare workers are.
Well, there's always trash bags, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget.
Trash bags and raincoats they're wearing. It's ridiculous. So there will be more deaths. There will be healthcare workers. There will be first responders. They're dying because we don't have proper PPE. And the idea, you can wash it. Well, if you look at the procedure on putting these gowns on and off is very intricate. And of course, the procedure is much more dangerous when they're taking them off, because they're contaminated then.
Correct.
So the idea is that A, you're going to take them off, and B, you're not going to just throw them out. You're going to go and take them and wash them. And you're just moving the virus around.
Do you know what the Russians did? Finish, Henry. Go ahead. Sorry. You're moving the virus around. Yes, that's all you're doing. And your washing machine is potentially contaminated, so you've got that too. But what the Russians did with the masks, they got real smart. They've impregnated the masks with silver ions. Silver kills viruses, so they can reuse the masks. They're self-sterilizing. This is the Russians, and they did this, and they're standing behind it.
Well, they're trying to do that here, too, with UV, and they've got machines that'll sterilize the mask, although they're somewhat limited as to how many they can do per day, but they can do some recycling. But the point is that they shouldn't have to do that. I mean, the masks are not that difficult to make. They're not that expensive. I mean, before the pandemic, they used to be like 70 cents.
Oh, but they must be, Henry, or our president would have ordered them to be made. They must be very difficult to make.
Like the ventilators, more complicated than an automobile or something.
Right.
Yeah, the mask and the gowns, I mean, there's really no excuse where there'd be shortages of this. There's plenty of manufacturing capabilities in the U.S. And he has the power to order that and to get get those items made in quantity. And instead they're haggling over the price and the distribution, and the whole thing for 3M took several weeks before they could
come to an agreement on exactly what they're
going to make. And that's just the mask. Now they've got a gown shortage. And it's the same thing. It's just like the tests. They can go, the tests take, four or five different components, and they've got three or four of them. So they're missing. I mean, they have the kits, but they don't have the reagents, or they've got the everything except they don't have the Q-tips, or they've got everything, but they don't have the machine. And it's kind of like, and then they use these press conferences and say, well, we did X million of this and X million of that. And like I say, if you've got three out of the four items, they don't do any good till you get that fourth item. So you can't really do the testing. So, I mean, the testing's still limited. The U.S. is definitely doing more testing, but on a per capita basis, they're still behind Asia and Europe and actually just running the basic test. And then the idea is that they can get an antibody test, they can find out who's been exposed, and at least find out who's got antibodies. Like you said, it's not clear what a good titer is on the antibodies. And this reminds me a lot of what happened with swine flu. With swine flu, you know, I was paying close attention to that in 2009. And there were people got infected more than once. There was a whole wave when school opened up, and people just had this mild infection. They had a cough. They didn't have a fever. They went to school. They didn't get that sick. And then like 6 weeks later, all of a sudden they got another round. And that one, people got a fever. They got tested. They saw the virus was all over the place. And people missed school. Although in many cases, they didn't miss that much. And in other cases, they still didn't have a fever, but they had a cough and they were contagious. And younger adults were more at risk, and they were mostly more at risk because of the swine flu was H1N1, and they really didn't get that much exposure to H1N1. That it got replaced by the 1957 pandemic, which was H2N2, and then the 1968 was H3N2. So that's what they grew up with, the other two strains being dominant, and they didn't get the exposure to H1N1, where the older people grew up with H1N1, so they had enough cross-reacting activity. But in any event, the idea that you could get infected more than once is not a surprise. And for H1N1, swine flu, they did a test here in Pittsburgh and before the vaccine came out, and they had, in school children, 40% had antibodies to H1N1. So it was clear that, it spread fairly widely. And, SARS-CoV-2, it's more transmissible than flu. And they had said that it was 2 to 3 times more transmissible initially. And now there's been some recent studies that says that it might be twice as transmissible, that it had an R naught. Instead of being 2 to 3, it had an R naught of 6. So, you know, it's able to spread fairly easily. And with the polybasic cleavage site, it can go to multiple sites in the individual. Right. And it's just very difficult to control. And so now the question is, you know, how soon is it going to get under control? How bad is the economy going to be damaged? And how soon is Trump going to decide that, you know, it's time to basically get rid of the social distancing? Or at least reduce it. Now, he's not going to be able to do that easily on his own because the governors are kind of
he's going to have Jerry do it.
But now what you're going to have is you're going to have some governors kind of lifting it and other ones that don't. And then you're going to have problems because, you know, if it starts to take off in one area, it's going to spread fairly easily. And then even if there's social distancing going on in one state, other people are going to come into that state and they're going to move the virus around. And then you're going to be stuck with, the economy is not really snapping back, and only some people are getting back to work. And now the virus levels are starting to go up. And what typically happens is, you know, the second wave is worse than the first wave. And there's already evidence for that because, you know, more sequences are coming out. And, for instance, you know, they're talking about a second wave in Asia. And, Singapore was starting to get cases now, mm-hmm. and Hong Kong is, and Japan is. And I was listening, you know, they were saying, oh, well, you know, that's probably because they're lifting the limitations in Wuhan. And, you know, now the virus is going to start, reappearing in China, and the levels are going to start going up. Well, right now, that's nonsense because the sequences are being released. And just today, a series of sequences came out of Singapore. And the sequences in Singapore are not coming out of China. Those are the sequences that are in the U.S. and Europe. So, it's U.S. and Europe virus that's causing a second wave in Asia now, because that's where all the virus is. I mean, you can just look at who's reporting the virus.
So they're imports.
Yeah, they're all coming in from people in Asia that had traveled to Europe or traveled to the U.S. and now they're going back.
Funny how
to these
it swept one way, then it swept the other.
Right, yeah. Right. And unfortunately, this is the Italian version is coming back, which is more virulent. Mm-hmm. So they've been mm-hmm. used to dealing with the initial Wuhan version, and now they're getting right. an Italian version, which is going to be harder to contain. But to make it even worse, the virus is evolving and it's picking up additional polymorphisms, and the sequences show evidence of dual infection. So these people not only have European strains, but they've got combinations of different versions of the virus from Italy. And it's going to recombine, and it's going to be more complex. And because it's got more complexity with more differences, that it's going to be able to come up with a version that's not going to be susceptible to the immunity that was developed from the earlier versions, and a more adaptive and a more virulent strain is going to arise, and that is going to create a more virulent virus in the fall. And so you're going to get, not only are you going to have a reemergence, but the reemergence is going to be more virulent. And you're going to have the worst of all worlds, where you're going to have an economy that isn't doing well, and it's not just in the U.S. It's going to end up being worldwide.
Of course
and
it
then
is.
You're going to have a virus that's going to be more virulent and ready to rock and roll. It's not going to be impacted by the immunity against the earlier versions. It'll probably be able to transmit as easy as this one, but it's going to have more severe consequences. So it's not a good situation. It's exacerbated by what's going on in the U.S. because right. even though there's social distancing and, you know, the levels are lower than they would be without that, it's still high enough that it's going to hang around, and people are going to get tired of the social distancing, and Trump's going to be anxious to get the economy moving. He's going to be worried about the election coming up, and it's just going to be a disaster, that the economy won't do well, and the pandemic will come up to a higher level. And
you better get ready for this fall, dear friends. Get ready.
That's kind of how it's shaping up. So it's so the numbers are high, and it's at this. I mean, U.S. is number one by a wide margin, and the numbers keep on going up. And I think that some of these things that look like good news aren't quite as good as they look. I mean, in New York, for example, there's more ICU beds. But part of the reason there's more ICU beds is because they're dying. The ones in the ICU are, I mean, each day it's a new record. It's not going up exponentially, but there were, you know, there were 777 today. There was, I mean, there's been over 700 deaths each day for the past 4 days. And prior to that, the numbers were in the fives. So there's an extra couple hundred deaths each day. So the deaths open up those beds. And so right now, the number of new cases is, they're getting around over 10,000 new cases a day. So it's kind of level. It's between 10 and 11,000 new cases. And with the cases that are dying at the higher levels, it's freeing up the bed. So it's not as big of a crunch for ICU beds because the cases that filled up those beds 3 or 4 weeks ago are now starting to die in these higher levels, and they're opening that up. And then on top of that, there's cases that are dying that at home, and so they're not
200 a day in New York, Henry. 200 a day in New York.
It got up to 280. It got up to 280. The numbers are going up in New York, and in addition to the numbers going up for the people that are dying at home, there are all these outbreaks now in long-term care facility. And those are going up not just in New York, but those are going on across the country. And these large numbers, these infections, some states aren't reporting them. Many states are not testing them. They don't want to bring them into the hospital, so they're actually dying in their in the facilities. And so there's a large number of unreported deaths. And so the deaths are going up, but they're not showing up on the records. And those are more examples of, you know, spreading in those long-term care facilities, and that's another indication on how widespread the virus is and how lethal the virus is. And so there's that information that's going on under the radar. And then there's another looming problem, which is going to be in the rural area, that, you know, the numbers keep on creeping up in the rural areas. And the problem in the rural areas is they don't have the hospitals. I mean, they've got hospitals that don't have any ventilators to in the entire hospital. They've got like zero, or they've got one. And so they really can't handle the patients that are coming in. So they don't need, you know, 10,000 new cases to be overwhelmed. They can be overwhelmed with a couple hundred cases, especially if they're the more serious ones. So that's why it's going to be a little bit uneven. Some of the large metropolitan areas, they're going to have spikes right now, but they've got these other areas where it's trailing. And right now, they're largely under the radar. The virus is spreading. There's not that much testing, and so they're only picking up a subset of it. And then when it gets to a critical mass, then all of a sudden you have large numbers of cases that are in need of ventilators, and the nearby hospitals don't have the ventilator, and so they have to be airlifted out and treated, and that's what they're going to do with the younger ones. I don't know what they're going to do with the older ones. I think some of the older ones, like if they're long-term care facilities, they're going to end up dying in those long-term care facilities. So the situation, in some respects, is improving. That the social distancing is keeping it at a lower level. In New York, they're now projecting that there's going to be 60,000 deaths, which is, you know, supposed to be a major celebration. There's only 60,000 instead of 100 or 200,000 or 240,000, which is a lower number than if there wasn't any social distancing. It would be, you know, 1 to 2 million. So in some sense, it's better, but in other sense, it's just it's going to be longer. The virus is going to hang around longer because you're kind of limiting the spread, but you're not eliminating the spread. So it's just going at a lower pace. And there's all these unreported areas. There's these veterans associations where they're not reporting the cases, and they're running through the veterinary hospitals now, and they're going through the long-term care facility. So the number of cases is significantly higher than what's being reported. So there's some parallels here with what was happening in China, that there were different ways in which deaths were not being reported there. The sudden deaths on the streets weren't being reported because they weren't being tested. And in the U.S., the deaths in the long-term care facilities or in the veterans hospitals are not being reported. Either they're not testing them in the long-term care, or the veterans they're not feeding that into the state labs, and so those numbers are being depressed there. And I think these numbers are, you know, make it even more likely that Trump is trying to be looking to cut back on the social distancing and getting people back to work, even though he doesn't have the testing to kind of monitor and knowing who's infected and who isn't infected, and that's gonna have an effect on, you know, going back to work, because people are gonna say, well, I want to get back to work, but I'm not sure how good an idea it is to go back to the place of business, and I don't know who's infected and who isn't infected, and then the numbers will start to go up. So the question will be, you know, is it advantageous to get back to work only to get infected with the virus and end up in the hospital, so you're not working anyway, and you're in the hospitals and they still haven't even got the PPEs yet? So they're going to have a significant impact on the healthcare delivery. So it's not a good outlook, and it's significantly worse than is being reported. And then the question is, well, what are you going to do in the fall? Is everybody going back to school, and are we starting, you know, high school and college sports followed by pro sports, or going to have football games again? And that's going to be a mess. I mean, even if they're not playing in front of fans, you've got the potential with the right. football teams and support ends up being a large number of people. And if the virus is really making a comeback, it's, you know, just football teams aren't going to be immune. They're going to get one or two people.
None of them are. So Trump's
run through the whole thing.
Trump's desire to protect his reelection pollings is going to open the economy up this summer. And chances are he'll have to shut it back down at least partially, quickly. That would be my guess. If he goes ahead and opens it up, we may be a year and a half away from what we used to call normalcy. It's going to be a while.
Yeah, I mean, they have to get the virus under control, and the virus has got all these characteristics that's going to resist control. I mean, Anthony Fauci was saying, you know, they said, what are you going to do in the fall? He says, well, hopefully things will be under control by then. But that is definitely in the hopefully category. category. I mean, these are aspirational predictions, and they likely have very little to do with reality. And it's kind of buying time and hope that it's going to be better. You know, it's hoping for the best, but it's not preparing for the worst because the preparations are not where they should be, and it's not clear that they're going to be where they should be in the next few months, because there's a demand in the U.S. which is higher than anywhere in the world, but there's still going to be a demand in Europe. And then
if
there's reintroductions in Asia, there's going to be a demand there also. So,
all right.
Anyway.
Okay. Go ahead. Wrap it up. That's the end of the week here.
So I was just going to say the death toll, the U.S. has already passed Italy, I guess, and it's Spain that's next, and they're like 200 deaths away, and or it's the other way around. They passed Spain, and they're 200 deaths away from Italy. So tomorrow, the U.S. will be number one in deaths, and nobody's going to catch the U.S. after that, because you know they're adding 2,000 a day.
Yeah.
And we're up to 34,000 a day in cases. So the numbers will continue to rise over the weekend. And we'll see how it looks next week, but it's not going to look that good. New York is leading the way, and they're still going to have these high deaths and these high new levels of new cases. And next week's not really going to be much better than this week.
Okay.
So,
all right, Henry, thanks again for everything. Talk to you Monday.
Okay.
We'll keep watching it. Be well. Stay safe.
Okay. Have a good weekend. Take care.
You
okay,
too.
You too. Bye-bye.
Dr. Henry Nyman, PhD, thanks for being here this week. We will be back with you live Monday. In the meantime, you know where you can find us. We'll bring you the news, all the news that we think is fit to print for you to consider to make up your own mind about this issue. Take good care. We'll talk soon. Be well.